Josh gets it, looks, gets away from pressure, rolls to the right sideline, fires it downfield, got a man wide open, caught. Dawson Knox makes the catch at the 15, cruises into the end zone. Touchdown, Buffalo!
If there's a turning point in our understanding of the Kansas City Chiefs, this season's supposed Super Bowl favorites, it would be last night, as Bills quarterback Josh Allen rained touchdowns upon Arrowhead Stadium, delivering Buffalo a weather-delayed 38-20 win. But the Bills weren't the only contenders announcing themselves in Week 5. So today, our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, makes sense of a running back that did not want to score, and kickers who looked like they didn't want to either, on what felt like a separation Sunday in the NFL. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, October 11th. This is ESPN Daily. Alex Smith, man, we're here. It is 12:46 a.m. on Monday. We waited out the lightning and the thunderstorms, and we watched, I mean, how would you describe what you just watched Josh Allen do to your former team? I mean, as he was hurdling people.
Allen, he's going to take over. He hurdles and picks up the first down. Whoa.
And throwing for three touchdowns and 315 yards and basically looking invulnerable at points.
It was a really impressive win. You know, it was probably our most boring, lackluster Sunday night game thus far. You know, we've been spoiled. These games have been awesome. But this was the game probably, looking on the calendar preseason, I maybe was the most intrigued about. You know, yes. Rematch of the AFC Same. Championship game. I wanted to see these two play again. And the Bills walked into Arrowhead and absolutely dominated tonight. I kept thinking the Chiefs were going to come back and make it a game. And it never got within reach. The Bills seemed to answer. Josh Allen answered the bell every time he had to. Maybe one of the most impressive performances, I think, of the season thus far, of the 5-week season, on a huge, huge spotlight, a team they lost to twice. You knew it meant a lot to them. And Josh Allen had some huge runs, led his team in rushing as well. I mean, it was really something, his performance. And again, I think some question marks on the other side for the Chiefs at this point, sitting in last place of their division, Week 5. How long do they have before they got to be able to turn it on, you know?
Yeah. The Chiefs at 2-3, bottom of the AFC West. I did not have that on my bingo card as of October 11th. But I want to ask about how the Bills have been using Josh Allen. As a quarterback, Alex, what did you see? What was their strategy in terms of attacking this Chiefs defense?
Well, the first thing I think people need to understand about Josh is he's very Cam Newton-esque in the sense that I remember the first time I walked out like pregame and saw Cam Newton, you know, and you shake hands with him. And you're like, there's no quarterbacks that look like that. I mean, he's a power forward. He's a power forward playing quarterback. Josh Allen is the same. I remember the first time I walked out there and you're looking up at this kid and you're like, holy smokes. I mean, he's a huge man. I mean, he's like 6'6", 240. I mean, he's a gifted athlete. So I think he showed a little bit of that tonight and Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, I think highlighted it. You could see him using his athleticism and size, run game in the red zone, some big conversions with his legs, and then the combination to throw the ball the way he does. I mean, he was flicking the ball 60 yards downfield.
Insane. Yo, that pass to Emmanuel Sanders was – how would you describe that throw?
The ball looks like a Nerf ball in his hand. It comes out like a Nerf ball. It's not fair, you know, and I'm really impressed with just how refined he is as a player. You know, he was this young guy with a huge arm, but he was wild and inaccurate supposedly. And could he bring it in? And he has really mastered, I think, his game, this offense. And he's dialed in right now. And a couple of throws he made, the post throw to Emmanuel Sanders, they hit him in stride. He flicked, you know, on a rope.
Shotgun snap. Josh Allen back to throw. Sets up, has time, fires it deep down the left side, got a man wide open, caught, touchdown Buffalo, Emmanuel Sanders.
The ball he threw to the Knox kid down the sideline, went out to his right, was another 60-yard throw, you know, going against the grain. He makes it look easy. He makes it look really easy out there. It was that was a big statement win tonight again. And then their defense is playing outstanding as well. So they look like the real deal.
Yeah. So let me ask you this too, in a way that, you know, is declarative in its own way. Are the Bills the favorite in the AFC, Alex? Yeah, you know, it's 1 a.m. Having just seen what you saw, does it feel that way to you?
Oh, I think they're the most bona fide team, yeah, right now. I don't think that's an overstatement. As far as just they've got great character in that locker room. They've got guys that have experienced deep playoff runs, played in big, big games. Certainly, I think, you know, there's some other, you know, we talked about the Chargers are a really good team, but they're so young and haven't been in some of those situations that it would be hard to give them that edge. I think the Bills at this point are the team to beat in the AFC.
All right, Alex. So I want to turn to the craziest game of the day, I think, because that happened in Los Angeles and the Chargers and the Browns. I'm getting this in front of me here because it's insane. They combined for 89 points and 1,024 yards. And this isn't what I expected to happen when I watched the Chargers start out slow in this game. But now I'm watching Justin Herbert pretty much every week, Alex, just transcend. I mean, he's playing the position, it feels like, as well as anybody else in the NFL right now. When you watch this guy, what does he do that separates him in your mind?
Justin Herbert is, I think, here clearly becoming a face of the league, you know, for a young guy to come in and do what he's doing. And I think to answer your question, ultimately, it's to see how he plays in the big moments. Situational football, I think, is what makes quarterbacks special. And the guys that can really do it consistently when it matters most, third down, red zone, key moments in games, 2 minute. And this guy has it. I think he's still leading the NFL in completions on third down. Again today, lighting it up on third down. It was impressive. I guess a really good front. I mean, he stood in there. He took some shots today against Myles Garrett and Clowney and those guys. And just it doesn't faze him. You know, and I mean, he had a huge ball to Mike Williams for like a 72-yard touchdown.
To throw, pocket collapse and takes a shot downfield. Has a man, caught Mike Williams. No one's there. 10-5, touchdown.
They went for it again three times today. You know, Brandon Staley, like, doesn't blink. One of them, I think, was like a 4th and 9. They converted. They went 3 for 3 on the fourth down. So, like, again, that's to me just is what's different. Like, watching him in those big situations, it just doesn't faze him. He goes back, he does his job. He continues to make these tight window throws. He seems so dialed in and locked into what he's doing that these big moments just don't take him out of it.
Yeah, is there a way that you can distinguish the quarterback from the coach? I mean, when you watch this system and how they operate, how do you disentangle those variables?
No, they go hand in hand. You can't untangle him. You could take the greatest quarterback of all time. You put him with a terrible coach. It's not going to be good. Vice versa. Great coach, bad quarterback. Like, I mean, it's not uncommon that we've talked about these, you know, offensive minds, coaching wise, and great quarterbacks. These duos that go together. There's been legacies of them throughout the NFL. You know, you obviously think about, you know, Belichick and Brady and Montana and Walsh and, you know, Holmgren and Favre. There's been these, and it isn't a coincidence. It's hard to have one without the other. Really, the quarterback, I think, ends up being an extension. The good ones being an extension of the coach out there. Again, to see a young guy doing it as well as Justin Herbert is. I mean, first year offense. He had a different system last year. Now he goes into year two, brand new coordinator, and just hasn't skipped a beat. And he's got some great weapons around him too. I think Mike Williams is slowly becoming, I mean, quietly becoming one of the best big play receivers in the league. I think he often gets left off a lot of these conversations, but thus far this year, man, he is big moments. Look out. Don't leave him one-on-one. And I think obviously Justin Herbert feels really good about putting the ball up to him and him coming down with it.
Yeah. So Justin Herbert very casually, I mean, that offense very casually collects 240 yards in the fourth quarter. They scored 26 points. You mentioned situational football, Alex, and that was an enormous and confusing story at the end of this game, because we saw the Chargers. I mean, again, Brandon Staley, as smart a chess master as there seems to be, especially as a young guy in the NFL, we saw him have Austin Eckler, the running back, you know, slide only 3 yards from the end zone to keep the clock moving with less than 2 minutes to go. And then on the next play, Eckler tries to stop short of the goal line again.
Yep.
But I mean, the Browns force the flubbing because the Browns defense, man, they carry him into the end zone.
Hand off to Eckler. They're trying to let him score.
They are.
And they are pushed carrying him into the end zone for a touchdown.
They pulled him into the end zone.
It was a nice play. It was a really smart play by that defense. It was a great play by Austin Eckler, the play before. He gets the first down. He goes down at the three, slides down in bounds. Game over, essentially, at that point. Right, you're going to run the clock out and kick the field goal. They decide to run it again. You could, you know, you clearly see that he doesn't want to score. You know, he's back there dancing around. And the Browns defenders almost got on the other side of him. They like ran around him and shoved him in to their own end zone. It was a really heads up play by them to get that done.
Had you ever seen that before, Alex? Have you ever seen this?
I've seen where they let him score, you know? Yeah, with the, you know, the give up defense. Let him. I've never seen them corral a guy on the other side of the ball and shove him in. And it was an amazing play. They had a chance. They got a Hail Mary off. They got the ball back to their offense, which was rolling. They drove it down to the 50 and got a throw off. I mean, it worked for them. It gave them a chance. You know, statistically, as crazy as that sounds, to shove a guy in your own end zone, giving yourself a chance to win. But statistically, it works out, and they made a heck of a play. And you know, who knows? We saw Hail Mary get caught today, so it's not out of the question. But that's how that game was. It was a crazy, crazy game. A ton of fun to watch. And yeah, the end of that game, situationally like that, it is a unique circumstance. You know, and then to ask a ball carrier, these guys that, you know, were so
wired. How do you ask, Alex?
You're so wired.
How do you ask? How do you do this in the huddle? I mean, no, but like, the wiring, how do you recircuit someone's brain at the most high impact, high stakes moments to say, actually do the opposite of what you've been trained to do your entire life?
Yeah, it does come back to great situational coaching. Yeah, that kind of stuff comes back to the meeting room and really preaching, showing examples of both ways. Because there's examples out there where the guys score and they end up losing the game. Mm-hmm. You know, and you think, well, guys scored a touchdown. But, you know, depending on the quarterback on the other side, you don't want to give the ball back. And it's smart football. You know, it's funny that, you know, obviously Austin, you know, tried to make the right play, Eckler, and then, you know, it backfired the very next play as the Cleveland defense shoved him in. So, unique circumstance. It's something that has to get talked about. It does come back to coaching, and the good teams go over all those crazy scenarios. You know, they go over them in the meeting room and rehearse them. And it was funny to see both sides duking it out in that kind of phase.
All right, Alex, after the break, I really need you to help me understand what it's actually like when, say, your kicker misses a game winner and then another game winner and then another.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So let's get to the Cardinals here, because that was an offense that seemed unstoppable, that actually did get slowed down. And look, they won this game, but they had scored 30 plus in their first four games. And then they play the Niners. And so when they win 17-10, I my brain goes to, wait a minute, okay, how did they get held to just 17 to remain the only unbeaten team in the league? What did the 49ers defense do, Alex, that you saw?
Yeah, definitely didn't see this coming. I think the Cardinals are the number one scoring offense in the NFL prior to today. It was interesting to watch. Not how I saw it was going to get played out, certainly beforehand, but watching it, the Niners did a great job, and it really kind of reminded me, honestly, of the Super Bowl this last year between the Bucs and Kansas City, in the sense that they were going to play really, really conservative, two high safeties, and not give up the big play, not give up the explosive play, rely on their good defensive front, which the 49ers defensive line, I thought, played outstanding today, really disruptive, a lot of penetration, got a lot of negative plays, and kind of challenged the Cardinals to march it, you know, and just to, could they – could they be patient enough just to dink and dunk it all the way down the field? And they couldn't. They weren't going to pressure Kyler. We've talked about on this show twice when teams pressure Kyler, he's made them pay, and they didn't do it today. They very situationally played some man here and there, sprinkled it in, but for the most part sat in a very, very soft zone. And it worked. And they got the Cardinals in some crazy – the third downs the Cardinals were in, they was like a third and 30, a third and 15, a third and 14. You know, they continued to get them in these backed-up situations. They played, played deep, made them throw it underneath, and rallied and tackled, and it worked. They weren't patient enough, I think, and kind of frustrated the Cardinals. I mean, I do think it starts with that D-line. You really can only play that way when your D-line is causing problems, and the Niners had it going today.
Is this a plan that is replicable, do you think, for other teams playing the Cardinals?
Yeah, and I think any if you're playing that kind of a explosive offense, even going back to obviously even kind of the Chargers, watching them, yeah, you got to – I think if you're trying to slow some of these offenses down, I think that's your only hope. You're not going to stop them. And so how can we slow them down? How can we play team football and try to come away with a win? And the Niners had a chance today, even with Trey Lance starting on the other side, who I thought did some really nice things. I mean, if they don't get stopped on the goal line on that fourth down and a couple other situations that came up, they're maybe stealing that game. But it's another big division win for the Cardinals and still undefeated. But, yeah, I do think it potentially is a recipe that people are going to try and replicate. Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to spin around to your old team here in the Washington football team, because the defense there, yep, Alex, that was supposed to be one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
They were that way last year, but now here we are a quarter of the way through this season, and they lose to the Saints 33-22. They've been torched for at least 29 points in all but one of their games so far. Chase Young just got his first sack of the season today against the Saints. They gave up a Hail Mary.
Here's Winston, just going to take his shot, throwing towards the end zone, and it is caught! My goodness!
It was bad, yeah.
As bad as it gets if you're a defense, what is different this season as you see it?
Yeah, this is another one I'm really surprised by. I thought they were going to roll. At the end of last year, when that defense really hit their stride, that defensive line was causing so many problems, a ton of pressure. They were creating turnovers all over the place. A really, really disruptive group. And kind of thought that's where they were going to, take off right where they left off, And it just hasn't been the case. And to watch them, that's kind of been the thing. They've been letting that defensive line try to work, rushing four, and they have not been getting home, and on the back end, they've been vanilla and been getting exposed. And really, I do think it comes back to the defensive line. I mean, just like we talked about with the Niners and how it worked today, if that front four, if you're going to play that way, can't get home, it can be tough sledding, because you really can leave the back end exposed. And that's really kind of what I see. I really feel like they're trying to find their identity on defense, something they can hang their hat on. And they actually started the game in the first half. It cost a couple turnovers. Chase Young got his first one, was a sack fumble. And it looked like I felt like they actually were getting ready to turn the corner. And then, man, when they got the Hail Mary thrown right before half, and then in the fourth quarter, gave up some big plays. It's tough. I do think they're searching. It's a group that's extremely talented. They should be playing better. Still a lot of football left ahead of them. I hope they can kind of, find their way, find their footing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, as humiliation and as stress goes, I don't think there was any situation that was more of both of those things than Packers-Bengals.
Short attempt. Crosby, 3-for-3 today. And this one is...
This was the first game, Alex Smith, since 1970 with five missed potential go-ahead field goals in the fourth quarter at overtime.
From the left hash, Crosby, 3-for-4 this afternoon. His kick from 51 yards out.
No good.
It's no good.
And so I want to do a little role play here. I want you to pretend that I am your kicker. I have just missed three straight field goal attempts.
Crosby from 40.
And here we are in overtime, and I have another chance to win this thing. It's not over yet. What are you saying to me, your veteran kicker, in that situation?
I think you have to try to impose as much confidence as you possibly can. without psyching him out either. You know, like you can't go full.
Because I'm so sweaty right now, Alex. I'm so sweaty right now.
You can't do the like, you can't go too artificially pump him up because then it's going to get weird. You just got to say just the right thing just to get him out there and go hit a confident ball, right? Like, I'm not sure what you say. I mean, kickers are all a little different breed, by the way. I mean, they're all a little weird specialists in the NFL. And it's situations like this where I'm like, I can't really blame them. You know, it's to think about their livelihood. I mean, Mason Crosby went 3 for 3 to start the game. He'd hit 27 in a row. So he's on a roll. I mean, it's 27 field goals in a row. He's a 15-year veteran. He's won a Super Bowl. I mean, been to multiple Pro Bowls and stuff. And then in the last 2 minutes of the game and overtime, he goes 0 for 3, you know, and
just
to get another chance, it's hard. I don't know mentally what you say to get him pumped up. I know I felt like it relates to me a little bit to like golf, and I've just sent 3 OB off the tee, and I got to re-tee this. And let me tell you what my thoughts are. They're not positive, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not in a good place mentally at that point. And I can only imagine, you know, missing 3 for your team on, you know, on TV, packed stadium, and to go get a chance to hit the 4th. And he hit it, which was great for him. Really, really good for him. But I mean, I didn't know it was possible to get that many field goal attempts. There were 3 field goal attempts in the last under 2 minutes of that game, back and forth. Another crazy end. And then even in overtime, 2 more. So wild, wild ending.
Today, Alex, it was wild for kickers everywhere, it felt like. We had, you know, over a dozen missed extra points and all. Like, the idea that here are kickers, these figures who, as you say, I think fairly are, relatively speaking, weird because they're not doing the same job as everybody else, but they are so important and very much a part of this team. Like, that distance and that intimate reliance on them for your livelihood,
yep,
too.
Yep.
I mean, this is to be inside of that, I imagine, is can be awkward, man.
I mean, I could only imagine. And again, it's so funny. They're so specialized, and they'd be, you know, kickers used to be football players. They used to play their positions way, way back in the day. And then obviously there was a transition, but yeah, these kickers in the biggest moments, man, make or break. And it's a tough livelihood. These guys have to have thick skin. Most of them have bounced around. They've been cut 15 times. They've been on, you know, 18 teams. I think, you know, to go the Ted Lasso route, I mean, you got to go to the goldfish theory here, and you got to have the short memory, got to be able to move on. Can't take the last kick with you. And in some aspects, obviously it's probably something we could all learn from.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm thankful I didn't have to be in that role. It's a unique situation, and that relationship in the locker room is unique. Right. Because, yeah, with these, you know, obviously a specialist, and, you know, no one else wants to be out there doing that, you know, and these guys carry a heavy burden. And so I think it's important to celebrate it when they hit them. You know, I'm sure the Packers, I know they're celebrating on that ride home, and good for him, Mason Crosby. I mean, a longtime vet to be able to ride out, you know, to miss 3 in a row and then hit a game winner. I think to have the opportunity and then do it was cool to see.
I like that, Alex Smith, as your Ted Lasso speech. Look, man. No one else wants to be out here doing that. So thank you. Well, Alex Smith, thank you for, you know, doing this with us.
Pablo, thank you as always, man. Good to be here.
Okay, up next, we make one last call to our teammate, Lewis Riddick, who is out in Baltimore and getting ready for Monday night.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So it's Sunday now in the books. The final game we have this week is Colts at Ravens. And so we reached out to our man in the booth, Louis Riddick, who's going to be calling tonight's game on ESPN. Louis Riddick, where are we catching you tonight, man? Where are you at?
Oh, I'm in Baltimore, man, down here at the harbor. Just hanging out. This is always a great time to come visit. Got a lot of nice restaurants, a lot of high-rise buildings. I like that. You know, I'm kind of a city dude, although I live in the country, so I like it.
So, Louis, I want to talk to you about the man who is in charge in the city where you are right now, because John Harbaugh tends to infuriate people. And I say that because just last week we saw him against the Denver Broncos running the ball on the final play of the game when the game was already over. The Ravens were about to win this thing regardless. And he did it to get to 100 yards rushing as a team, thus tying the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s for the longest streak of 100-yard rushing games in NFL history.
Lamar, can he get four to keep the streak going? I think he got it. I think they're going to get 100 right on the nose and tie the NFL record.
So, look, you know this guy. You spent time around his team all week. Do you get the sense that he's bothered by any of the criticism that he's heard? Does he care about any of this?
No, he doesn't at all. As a matter of fact, he kind of has the mindset of get over it. If you don't like it, then stop us. Stop us from breaking the records. And really, he's not really cared about everyone else's feelings. What he does care about is how much this organization and the players and the coaches, all who have had anything to do with this rushing record, how much he owes it to them to allow them to go ahead and kind of, you know, take their place in football history with continuing this streak on that they established. And considering the fact that it's a record that they're trying to break tomorrow night that was established 40 years ago, you know, with the great Steelers teams of the 70s. I mean, that's a big, big deal, man. And I don't care if Vic Fangio gets ticked off about it or any other coach would get ticked off about it. Neither does he. His loyalty is to the players here and to this organization. And he wants to do right by them. And he doesn't feel as though he would be doing right by them if he somehow then didn't allow them to go after something that could etch their place in history forever.
So the idea that the Ravens were going to be this team that is now etched in history for running the football, I mean, what happened to them before the season even started, like, jeopardized that entire concept, right? I mean, they lose J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Justice Hill, all of these guys in the backfield to knee injuries. And obviously, in comes Lamar Jackson. And Lamar is excellent to the point where the Ravens are 3-1, third in the AFC in scoring coming into this week. How do you see what the Ravens are doing right offensively right now?
What is really scary about that system is that it really is not just a run game system. It is. It also has a very sophisticated play action passing game built off of it. And now that Lamar is growing by leaps and bounds every week, it is eventually, I think, in their mind and in my mind, going to result in this team being one of those offenses that will be mentioned the same way we mention, like, the Dallas Cowboys offense right now, which is we're so multiple. We can beat you with however, you know, you choose to play us. We can beat you with what matches up best for that. That's what Baltimore is working towards with a much more sophisticated running game. And now that quarterback who makes it all go, you saw him last week. You saw what he did to Denver's defense. Yeah. This guy is one of the best deep ball throwers in the NFL now. And it's not just by luck. He's not just throwing it up there and hoping those guys come down with it. That's why I think this team offensively could be one of the best offenses that they have had since this organization started playing football here again as the Baltimore Ravens. And that's not hyperbole, that's the truth.
So if the Ravens are realistically one of the best offenses in the NFL, I am curious how you describe what the Colts are dealing with right now, Louis, because their quarterback, Carson Wentz, I mean, that was supposed to be an answer to many questions. And maybe that was unfair. Maybe there are too many questions to even attempt to solve here. But they're 1-3. The offense has been fairly anemic. What are they not getting out of Wentz right now?
What's happening with him is kind of a two-part issue, if you want to call it an issue, okay? The first issue is that he's not healthy, okay? And he's just getting healthy right now. I think coming into this game is as healthy as maybe he will have been since training camp. And then secondly, what has made this offense historically go overall has been the offensive line, and it's just beat up. It really is. I mean, 3/5 of what this offensive line considered to be its strength at one point in time is not here. It's not playing. That's a lot to miss as far as then turning around and trying to meet expectations from an offensive perspective with a new quarterback. And not to mention that T.Y. Hilton is not healthy either. So one of their big downfield threats is not here. So there's a lot of things going on that are contributing to maybe Carson Wentz right now not blowing it up from a throwing perspective.
Right. So Professor Lewis Riddick, then, are you giving them an incomplete as opposed to an F at this point?
Absolutely. And you know what? See, Pablo, you know this. We're quick to make final judgments on things in the sports world now because we're such a prisoners of the moment type of society.
Lewis, we have podcasts to make, man. We got takes. We have takes to shovel into the furnace. That's right.
Hey, dude. And you know what? Hey, I love it. If they had everybody back, if they had everybody healthy and they were, you know, struggling in terms of yards per attempt throwing the ball, yards per carry running the ball, then I would be like, yeah, man, maybe this thing needs to be kind of like broken down and rebuilt. But they haven't even had it all together yet. That's why I think it's just too quick to cast judgment.
So maybe the biggest knock on the Ravens defense came from Marlon Humphrey, Lewis. And I don't know if you know where I'm going here, but the Ravens honored Michael K. Williams, the late, great Michael K. Williams, before their Week 2 victory over the Chiefs. And they did it, of course, by playing the iconic whistle of his character Omar from The Wire.
Yo, son, come on. Yo, Omar coming, man.
Marlon Humphrey says that he not only did not hear that, he claimed he probably wouldn't have even been that impressed by it because he did not like The Wire.
I was not a fan of The Wire, so I did not keep watching. I know I'm probably going to upset some people, but I couldn't get into it.
And I'm here to just ask you, is that even allowed in the city where you currently are, Lewis? Can you actually play in Baltimore and get away with saying something like this?
I guess, you know what, when you're as good as Marlon Humphrey, yeah, I guess you can, because he's an absolute freaking beast. And if you know anything about Marlon Humphrey, man, he's such a, like a well-versed, you know, multi-faceted individual who has a lot of varying interests that I wouldn't doubt for a second that he really didn't care, didn't know,
it was a take that he clearly believed in and he was brave to express publicly.
Marlon is his own guy, and he's an interesting cat, man. Honestly, although the city of Baltimore may be pissed off at him, they encourage that kind of thing around here. If you ever get a chance to spend some time with this organization, this owner, this head coach, you'd see what I mean. They love it, man. This is a different type of play. It's really cool.
Yeah, I guess I just have to begrudgingly respect at this point the unifying theory of these Ravens, which is that they just do not care at all what any of us actually think.
Yeah, they don't, man. But they're a tight-knit group.
Professor Riddick, thank you for caring, at the very least, about us.
Absolutely. Thank you, man.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.